This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 329 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Tori H.
And now, on to episode 504, entitled The Company We Keep.
So there is no cold open this week. We go straight into the intro, and our title card is of a gent playing with money.
Oh, we know who that was. Come on.
We find out later.
We find out later. Didn't you know immediately?
No.
Really?
Oh, I should have because of the cold coin
thing? Yes, because of the coin and the flipping and the putting it, like flipping it over and looking at the heads or tails. That was obviously a nod to Stephen Bonnet.
It wasn't obvious to me, but obviously as soon as I heard later, as a matter of fact, the first time I watched it, I thought that, I was like, oh, someone with a coin. And then we learn that Bonnet had been around, you know, to talking to Mrs. Bug and everything. I don't even think the first time once we saw that or heard that, I didn't go, oh, that was him at the top. No, it wasn't until the second or third viewing when I saw the title card again that I was like, oh, okay, I know who that is.
That was literally the first thing. It's the first thing we saw that was new, and it was the first thought I had. I was like, ugh, Bonnet.
So we don't see his face, but later on we find out that it is indeed Bonnet.
Well, technically, we don't find out that it was Bonnet, but it's definitely an Irish dude who gave a coin to the baby.
According to Mrs. Bug, yes. So we are back with Captain Roger and his militia as they arrive in Brownsville. I love seeing the twins. The twins are following along. Fergus helps out Roger, who was a novice at this whole thing.
Fergus in his green Red Riding Hood cloak.
This is probably the most, at least I remember, except when we first saw him in season 3. This is the most I think we've seen Fergus's wooden hand in a single episode.
To be fair, it's the most we've seen Fergus in an episode this season at all.
Well, yeah. They arrive, and pretty much right when they get there, they're being shot at by the man of Brownsville.
Mm-hmm.
For something someone has done. And between the shots and the shouting and the shots, they hear that the guys from Brownsville are yelling about Isaiah. Well, they say Isaiah. Davina says Isaiah. So this is a whole Marsali thing. It's going to be what it's going to be, okay? Isaiah, you'll see what comes out next time. Morton, or I can just say Morton because everyone agrees on that. Morton, they're yelling about Morton. In the midst of all this drama, a crying Alicia Brown, I presume, comes out saying she couldn't marry another dude, Elijah Forbes, and please do right by me. Comes out to talk to Morton. She's like, you have to do right by me, Morton.
And that was a real ballsy move of the Browns. They were outnumbered. So just to like start shooting, I mean, granted, they're all hunkered down inside of like a building and they are all protecting all of the entrances. But, you know, still they're outnumbered, which comes into play later.
And her mom, Alicia's mama, comes out, slaps her, and says, are you going to show the whole world your shame? And by that, she means our shame. Lord,
God, you know, I hate this. Like, I'm so – and we're fresh on the heels of the only female in the presidential race dropping out today. And it's rife with all of the misogyny. And having to talk about this episode on the heels of that is just – I have a lot of feelings, and I'm feeling, as a woman, really not – what's the word? I'm feeling – it's not underappreciated. That's not the right word. I'm feeling undervalued, like I'm not – like we're not worth it or anything or as much as anything else. And seeing an episode like this where even the women are perpetuating the internalized misogyny is really hard to watch today.
I understand that, and I understand what you're saying, but this is the 18th century. Of course they're going to be.
It is, but I'm not 18th century, and watching this on the heels of everything that's actively happening right now was really hard, and that's all I'm saying.
I understand that. I was about to say, and it's fiction, but that's not the point. The point is, it was in this story, which everyone knows is fiction, is it's, I can see how it can be especially sensitive, an especially sensitive thing to watch right now. So what about showing your whole, the whole world your shame? Well, I wrote, well, not actually. It's a, that part takes a few months.
Well, not only that, but I mean, showing the whole world is what, 40 people? 40 randos who are never going to remember that chick's name.
Yeah, but think about it.
Days.
People in Brownsville, especially the women, probably aren't going to go outside of Brownsville. I mean, she had a chance to go marry Elijah Forbes and she turned him down.
But can we talk about Brownsville?
It's a pretty nice Brownsville.
Right? I was like, there's a lot going on. They have like a market.
Summer, why are you even, I mean, I'm not belittling your reaction because it was mine too. I'm sure a lot of people are having that. But in the wake of the big house,
mm-hmm.
and season four's the big first cabin. I mean, not even just big. That wasn't even necessarily huge. It was just super nice, super decked out. Anyway, I'm not trying to get into that conversation, but the whole point is this.
There's a straight up farmer's market in the alleyway. Oh, like they have stands selling like wares. Like it's
they
not
have
just
the
like
OK Corral on one side where they have room to shoot, and they have the right. farmer's market on the other side. They have, I mean, yes.
And a well, not paved, but a well-established road that runs between all of it. And that's, and maybe that's just on me in how I read the description of Brownsville as it was in the book. But I in my brain, it was just a collection of houses. I never expected there to be a market and like selling stalls.
That's because there wasn't. There wasn't.
Okay, I didn't reread leading into this chapter.
Do you think I ever reread? Who got time for that? No.
I didn't remember it well enough to have spoken specifically about that. I can only speak to my recollection. Okay.
Two things I do, not everything, but this I do. And also, it's like I've said with people who have been disagreeing with you, me, us, others, whatever, about the whole, you know, oh, it's fiction. Oh, that, you know, forget the book. Well, no. I don't think the argument or the discussion or the whatever is book versus show. People make it out to be that way, and I see that. And some people may actually be holding onto the book so hard that it's like a battle, which it shouldn't be, right? Because they're different. So while I think some people hold on really tightly to one and have a hard time maybe letting it go or comparing, like you said, we absolutely make observations. We absolutely make comparisons. Not necessarily... Sometimes we do. Not necessarily to say what is better or how it wasn't brought up to the books or how it should have been. No, not about that. But because this is another example. It's not about the big house is way too big or the big house is ugly. It ain't ugly. It's ridiculously gorgeous. But the vehemence, and hopefully that's not that doesn't come across at least too much as it's more passion, I believe, but the vehemence or the passion or the energy with which some people, including us, make statements like, holy smacks, that's crazy town, is not a judgment on the quality of production or their adaptive choice. It's a statement on the holy crap, that is so different. It surprised my balls off, you know, that kind of thing. And you just gave us a perfect example of that. You were like Brownsville. You were like, hey, Brownsville, how's it going? Because it wasn't like that in the book. And I know people hate saying, but in the books, and that's not how I'm trying to make it come across. Because all we have is the book, right? Before we see anything, that's all we have. If you have nothing to comparison, you know, God bless you. I think you have an easier time, honestly. But because like, our reaction and many fans, book fans react, book readers reaction to the big house or to whatever was, holy crap, that's big. Holy crap, that's nice. Holy crap, how did they get all that nice stuff? Is not putting anything down. It is, because it is so different, it is a shock. That's all. Post shock or post explaining shock, we may say things like, dang, they got money somewhere, you know. We may go off into a conversation about it, but the reason, Summer, that you were saying so much and have such passionate feelings or strong reactions to something is because it's so, I wouldn't say maybe 180, but maybe it's so different. It's not just other. It is so freaking different. That's the thing.
That's
when
other.
Something is made, it's like Willems Creek. It was like a 3-day journey or more, or maybe a week. Now it's like a 3-hour journey. It's like it has changed so much. Now I'm not saying it's bad. I think what it allows them to do, it allows, for example, Bree to go off on an afternoon's ride to the market. So yeah. So just so you guys, we're going to keep saying this probably every episode, because our passion for the books, for the production, for Diana, for the story, it is there. And I don't think anyone can doubt that. I mean, we're on episode 329. I don't think that's a question, if it ever was.
Well, it's not a question. We have never claimed to not be book readers from day one. We've been book readers, and we reread the book before every season. That's not new, and that's not special. That's just what we do. And it's been 5 years now.
No, 5 years. Been 7 years. Almost
it's
seven.
It's been 5 books.
Yes.
5 books of read-alongs. This is not and should not be treated as something new or unexpected.
And like last week when we were saying, I think both of us said that we were surprised about the previous episode, I believe, when Claire didn't go with them to Hillsborough in episode 502. It's not a judgment, right? It's not that. It's
and
because...
It's, and it's not a statement saying that they can't be apart. No one's ever saying
absolutely.
That.
No, absolutely. No, of course, they don't go pee together. Come on. Don't be ridiculous. Don't be pedantic about
this.
They
could.
The point is, big picture, I see two different types of adaptive choices, right? There's all the choices that go into like what you keep, what you don't keep, how you make, how big Brownsville is, or how big the big house is, right? Characters you keep, characters you don't keep, characters you can inflate into one, characters you keep alive past their due date. You know, all these due date is in their death date. All of those things you may like, you may not like, but those are adaptive choices. That to me, that's the bread and butter of this. That's what we're here for. We may miss something. We may even be disappointed in something, but it doesn't mean we don't like the show, right? That to me is like 98%, maybe 97% of adaptation of what they are doing, I should say. The 2-3% that gets is when like Jamie on the boat season 3 tries to get Fergus to commit mutiny, right? That my point is that's a change in character, not of a character, of an internal character of Jamie's character. Her not going with him to a potentially deadly situation is a change in character. She didn't make the decision. The production did. And that's okay. I'm just saying I am noticing two different types, and maybe there's more and I'm being blind to them, but I see two different types of adaptive choice. So Roger's idea how to get out of this being shot, he basically says, yo, 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 I'm here. I come in peace. And we bring whiskey. And he puts his weapon down. He gets them to listen and to not shoot. Back on the ridge, Brianna has gone into town. As I said, it's so close by. And is welcomed back because she's been missed the whole day. She's got some things for Lizzie. It's orange blossom perfume or water or something. And she's got paper and other things. I didn't write down everything. And baby Jem came with her. And as did Mrs. Bug. At least those two. There may have been another one that I missed. She picks up Jem, or maybe Lizzie picks up Jem, but Jem's gone in his little basket thing. And she finds a coin at the bottom of the basket. And she's like, Mrs. Bug, did you see, how did this get under here? What's going on? And Mrs. Bug says, oh, it was a man speaking to Jem and saying what a handsome lad he is, etc. Now, as a side note, this is for book readers because... it's a line from the book. That's only reason why. I'm going to say, since he straight up spoke to Mrs. Bug, I am shocked he didn't say, who's your daddy? Weren't you?
No.
Well, he didn't. He just said, what a handsome lad. And then he gave him the coin. But she does say he was Irish. Like, okay, that's all
she can hear.
With the gift
of the gab.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. So it's a gentleman, but that's all she recalled. Nothing else. No scar. Nothing else. And Bree tells Lizzie that, you know, maybe let's move into the big house. It's better there while everyone's gone.
We're so far away. And if something happens, we should be with everybody.
And right at that conversation, which I get, it makes sense, was hecka ominous music, yo. Hecka ominous. And then back to Brownsville. I never did, like, count, but I should have. as I wrote it down, probably every time. I wonder how many times Alicia cries. Alicia.
Almost every scene.
Yes. She's crying. Isaiah Morton is tied up. And everyone's drinking whiskey.
As you do.
Roger tries again. Look, we are militia. We come here. We are under the gov. We must fight the regulators. And he says, like, oh, Roger, you are definitely green at this. He says, quote, we've come to notify you of your obligation.
He was given legitimately no training. Like, none.
And Jamie recognized that later on. He's like, sorry, dude. I mean, Roger felt bad. He's like, no, I could do it.
He said, sorry, dude, while also demoting him, basically, and being like, go away. You're a tool. Allow me to clean up your mess, you stupid singing bastard.
Okay, he did not say or think
he
that.
He didn't, but let's be honest. Every time Roger started singing, instead of being a quote-unquote captain, I was like, oh, my God, dude, stop. Stop singing. look like you're doing something important, because what you're doing right now, there should have been a record scratch when they showed up with that baby. There should have been everyone stop singing.
It was Lionel Brown was the one who was in charge at first, and the one who gets stupid drunk. And it's Richard who came later. Richard is the more, I don't want to be too.
Wasn't he the father?
Generous. I think Lionel was the father of Alicia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he Roger, went after Forbes or whatever the dude's name is.
Richard.
Yeah, he was gone after Forbes trying to heal that whatever, and he came back, and the guy was like, did you find Forbes? And he was like, it didn't work.
Yes, but that does not answer the question, who is the dad?
My assumption is that he would be, if he were the father, he would be the one to go after and try to make the marriage thing still happen. That was my assumption.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Who sends the uncle out to sort out your own kids?
The uncle
nonsense.
Might be a little less emotionally tied. And willing or ready to kill him. I don't know.
No.
So not kill him, but, you know, to be like, please take her. Please take her. No, I'm not taking secondhand goods. You bastard. So who knows? He might be a little bit less want to kill him or hurt him. So it was Richard that came later on. Lionel says that when the militia leaves in the morning, Morton won't be with him. Huh. That's a little bit of a warning there. In betwixt all of this, Claire and Jamie haven't arrived yet. They're stopped for the morning, and Claire has the baby. Jamie basically names her Bonnie, and he gets all swarmy seeing Claire with the bairn. And then we go to Brownsville. We find out some of the men have left due to Roger's decision to not hand over Morton. Huh. So, yeah, he definitely doesn't have much training, does he? I agree. He's not really ready for that. Roll.
Well, you can't expect a 20th century college professor / singer to be as grizzled and war ready and war hungry as anyone from this time period. He's thinking of the larger picture, and one dude being confined versus 5 to 6 to half of the men being shot because they're aimed at by these people inside of a house seems like a much better solution than getting all these people hurt. It's hard to not side with Roger, but at the same time, it's hard to not see that he's not thinking clearly.
Oh, I don't think that's hard to see. Oh, yeah. It's very easy to see he's not thinking clearly. He is thinking clearly.
Through the lens of the 20th century.
That's never going to change. He is not thinking. He's thinking clearly. You can't say he's not, because he's not like he's not under the influence of anything, or is he ill? But he isn't thinking like a captain. You're right. Like someone who is trained. And if he had been a little bit more trained, he would have, you know, maybe not done it this way. But you're right. You cannot. I don't think you can fault him for making the decision he did. He did the best with the information he had and his experience, which was And yeah, coming from an academic background, someone who sings. I mean, you're right. He is not seeing the bigger picture. He is seeing the picture that he doesn't want people to get killed. And he also wants to save Morton.
He's seeing what's right in front of his face and not thinking about the larger repercussions of his actions.
Yes. Claire and Jamie arrive in Brownsville, and it looks like Roger's hosting a shindig. And so far, I mean, I'm not 100% right because last semester. Some remember last semester? Okay, episode 504. Excuse me, that's this one. Episode 503. There was no Roger, correct?
It was very brief.
So it was just a little in the beginning?
It was like, it was Claire and Jamie leaving, and then it was that moment that happened when he was getting those boys to sign on.
Yes, but also in the beginning, I remember now. So it was Claire and Jamie leaving, and also Roger was saying goodbye to Bree, and Bree saying goodbye to Jamie. You know, it was all the goodbyes at the beginning. So we did have a hot second of him. So, okay, he's been in every episode, but he has not sung in every episode. But Summer apparently has had her eyeballs full of it. Except for episode 503, he has been singing it in every Ding Dong episode, which was along the lines of my prediction. I missed one because he was hardly in it. It was not appropriate to sing there. But you got to have him sing in every episode.
I need to preface this with an explanation. I do not have a problem with Richard Rankin singing. I adore his voice. He can sing me to sleep any night he wants to. That's not the thing. The thing is the appropriateness of the when and the how. And what he did tonight seemed pretty inappropriate because I promise you, if my boss showed up to my desk expecting to find me working and I'm sitting on it playing my ukulele and singing to a bunch of people gathered around, I promise you, I'm losing my job immediately.
He did, Summer. He did.
Well, then Jamie did the right thing. I'm just saying that was a record scratch moment that should have stopped the singing and been like, you guys keep playing. I'm going to go sort this out.
So Roger's hosted a shindig. And so they are continuing to lay that groundwork. ... That's all I can say with regard to him being the singer. Claire tells Josiah that, look, we've got your indentured papers. You are free. You are fly free. What is that saying? Fly, freeze a bird, fly away, birdie. I don't know. Something like that. Jamie says, you're 14, right? He's like, oh, no, I must be older. And Jamie's like, no, you are 14. Mm-hmm. That made me laugh. You will go back to the ridge and hunt for people. You are my I did this for you. I went to hell for you. I killed a dude for you. I have another baby that I might have to keep because of you. I'm just kidding.
No, he's like, anyway, he's like, we're free. And I think the real answer should have been kind of.
No.
Because no, you're not.
You're not. You got to go back there.
No.
You got to go. I want to keep you safe, which is legit. That's straight from the book. And he... Also, it's nice of him, obviously, but it's also self-serving because it does help protect the people of the ridge. He's going to help. He's an excellent hunter, and he's going to help keep people fed during the winter. Claire Claire says, someone says the line, I think it was Jamie, I think. And he says something like, we had a small difficulty. And Claire's like, can we take care of this small difficulty?
Do I want to hear this? No, and then Fergus is like, that's very quick work. Whatever he said, he was like, that's impressive that you were able to make that happen in the time you left. And that comes back later.
They find someone to nurse the small difficulty. Now, if I'm not mistaken, when they first hand off the baby to be fed, she says the woman or the mom, Alicia, I think it's the same woman who's Alicia's mom is the one who's kind of in charge
here.
It's
not Alicia's mom. That's like Alicia's aunt because she says, if your mother was alive.
Oh, I didn't know Alicia's mom was dead.
Yeah.
Okay. So the woman who is directing a lot of things. Oh, wait. So the one who slapped her is not her mom?
No.
Oh.
It's like an aunt or something. It's a family member, but.
It's a brown. It's a brown. It's a female brown. So. The woman who slapped her, whoever she is, she's kind of like the most in charge woman of the Browns that we see.
Mm. She's the senior lady.
When she takes Claire into the room where Claire says, you know, here's this woman just had a baby. She will be able to feed the small difficulty. And she takes it and starts. Okay. So when she says she just gave birth, she'll have the milk. And I was like, oh, okay. So this, you know, this makes sense. Obviously, someone who's nursing or who has just given birth, that makes sense. But later on, she says, and her name is Lucinda.
Sad on rewatchings because she never, ever, ever spoke to it.
Okay. So I was right. So she did. She did give birth.
If you go back and rewatch it, you can see that every time Claire was like, oh, two mouths. And she was like,
she never said, you're right. She never says yes. Her answer was like, my husband is very generous.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. That's even better.
It was sad.
I like how they did that then. So they are able to find a boob for the small difficulty.
Two.
Well, that's true. But he can only do one at once, one at a time. So Roger and Jamie, he's telling Jamie why he used the whiskey. Because Jamie's like, our whiskey? It's gone? And he's trying to convince him, like, look, haven't you heard of Dutch courage, dude? It's going to, like, it's going to make people feel better when they're, you know, maybe not getting their way. And then he tells Jamie that some of the men left. Jamie's like, the fuck? And this is why, Jamie. He takes him to a tied up Isaiah. Jamie is not too impressed with Roger. Yes, 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 he did avoid confrontation and he kept the peace. But Jamie reminds him that men left because he betrayed their trust. He says honor and loyalty above all else. Jamie isn't convinced about Roger right now. So they go to see Morton, who's been still tied up, but he's been taken into the...
No, but did you see, like, they went inside and then they walked outside for like 2 seconds and then turned around and walked back inside. Like, he was like, come out here so I can talk to you. And now let's go back inside and finish our conversation with Isaiah.
And it was the stable, I think, because that was where he was, with the horses, right?
The horses?
Isaiah was tied up and outside.
No, I'm he sorry, was tied in, up inside, in a barn or something. In something
at like first a storage he was, shed. Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying. At first, when he was tied up, and maybe it was a storage shed, but he was first tied up when the people were drinking around him. So he was in a different room. And then now he's in like a shed or the stable or something. That's all I'm saying. So they go to see Morton and Jamie says, quote, no, okay, I listen like 4 times. Please, someone, because again, when we're recording this, we don't have access to the script yet. And if Summer wants to, or you guys, anyone, please correct me because I'm pretty sure I'm wrong on at least one word. But when they go in to see Morton and Jamie looks at him and he says something about his cock. And I thought, what?
Yeah,
I
missed out on the first one. Your cock got me in trouble. Like your penis is the problem here.
What I want to know is like what all the words were. It was something, this is what I heard and I think I was wrong. Quote, what this array of you and your cock have brought upon this endeavor, unquote.
What disarray have you and your cock put upon our endeavor?
What disarray of you and your cock, or have you and your cock brought up this and brought upon this endeavor? Oh Lord, great line. He's like, you need to make this right. You need to marry the girl. And he's like, well, you see, there's like a wife involved.
I can't marry somebody because I'm already married.
So he says it was an arranged marriage and we never loved each other. There's no kids involved and I love Allie. And Roger says clemency. I wrote that down. Roger says clemency. What the hell does that mean?
We should consider clemency for the man. After all, love makes fools of us all.
Okay. So Roger's like, look, J-man. We all understand love. I recommend clemency. Love makes fools of us all. Yeah. Jamie tells him, Morton, he's like, I think Jamie, more so than wanting to do recognize or recommend or see give clemency, I think Jamie just doesn't want to deal. And he's like, I can't, like, this you need to leave. I don't want you dead. You are a problem, though. So just get out of here. And he goes. Claire, meanwhile, tells the brown women all about the Beardsleys. What happened? How Aaron wasn't the father of the baby. And Alicia is getting some side eye from her auntie. Mm. And as she's sitting there talking to them, she like moves her hand and she spills a drink some liquid on this pamphlet sitting on this little stand next to her. And what do you know? It's Dr. Rawlings Recommends.
That was like a really
quick.
What's the word?
Not considerate.
I mean, I guess after the last episode, I didn't expect such a swift resolution, not even resolution,
a grande.
Maybe, but I don't feel like it's the end, but I didn't feel like we would have known the outcome of that.
That quickly?
Yeah. I thought they would have dragged that out a couple episodes.
It was a little bit too precious. It was a little bit too quick, a little bit too easy. And that's why I think you're right. I don't think it's the end yet. So she's like, uh-oh. And she looks at it and, yep, this is all we're talking about from episode, what, 502? When Jamie gives Fergus a dictate and he writes a note and he has to go in and grab a piece of scratch paper and it's one of these. That's what happens, people, when you don't look around. I don't know who I blame. I can't really blame Fergus because he was just told to get paper. Claire leaves crap around and doesn't like organize it. But whatever. No one intended it. So Alicia takes it and says, yeah, it's a tract about advice for women and or about health. And for example, this one here talks about how women can avoid pregnancy. And I was like, whoa. Her auntie's like, yeah, you don't talk like that stuff. That's not.
She's like, don't bring up that gross stuff in front of company. Come on. This is inappropriate.
Exactly. And then even it's taken away. And even Lucinda, the one who's nursing the baby, is like, she's also anti-Alicia. Poor she's Alicia like, gets it.
Well, because Lucinda did the right thing. She got married first. I mean, she had her baby in the right order.
I mean, she lost a baby, but yes.
Stop it.
No, I mean, she did have a baby, but right now she's nursing someone else's baby.
She had a respectable baby, even if it died.
Correct. That's true. So Lucinda, who had just given birth, but she will take the babe, Wee Bonnie, that night.
And I love that she just never mentions it. She's just like, oh, I'll take her. There's no reason for you to wake up because she's crying and not be able to do anything about it. So I'll just keep her because I can feed her if she wakes up crying. Which just made it sadder on the rewatch, as I was saying. It was like, oh, poor bug.
Claire asks to take the pamphlet, and she's like, I can, I can start a fire with it. And they're like, yeah, that's pretty much what it's good for. And then we have a scene with Jamie and Claire, and Jamie is wearing his spectacles. I love a bespectacled Jamie. And Claire shows him the oopsie pamphlet, and he starts to think about it. We don't have their conversation right away. And then Lionel is blasted. He tells Fergus that the champagne, he's talking to Fergus about the whiskey and the drinks and everything. And Fergus is telling him about champagne. And he's like, no, that's for girls. That's for girls. And Jamie tells Fergus that when you got that scratch paper, dude, you may have gotten the Dr. Rawlings paper. So. And then when he took it to the printer must have decided to print it when he saw what was on the back.
Well, I mean, but think about it. If your job is to fill up this broadsheet, right? So you have a newsletter and you're like, God, I've got 4.5 more square inches of room and I don't have anything to put there. Oh, look, there's more words. I'll just use those.
So he does it and they should be safe unless someone goes out trying to find the author.
Well, and that's the whole thing is it's the whole what if, right? Because you don't know what's going to happen and you don't know what people are going to get pissed off about.
Correct. And then people, meaning the dudes who are not Jamie and Roger, find out that Morton is gone and they freak out. And we knew, of course, but now everyone knows.
Hold, please. Is this before or after Roger's singing again?
I think not before.
I think you're after, because I think she takes the broadsheet and heads out and it immediately shows Roger out singing with a fiddler again.
Look, it wouldn't surprise me. I think it's become so much a part of it that I just gloss over it now. So everyone knows now that Morton is missing. And Lionel's like, was anyone guarding him?
No, we're all drunk.
It's like, no, they were drinking.
That's what you do when there's free liquor. What's wrong with you? Of course they were drinking.
In rides Richard Brown, the more clever and dependable of the two Brown brothers. What the hey? He unfortunately had no luck convincing Elijah Ford to marry Alicia. And Jamie's all, because they talk about Morton and all this stuff. It's like, if you harm Morton, you'll have to answer to moi.
Well, he's not even there. He's like, he doesn't have Morton anymore.
Yeah.
So he's like, I had him and they're going to go find him. And when you find him, and that's where Jamie's doing what Roger should have done the whole time, which is
he is one of the militia and we are answerable to the governor. So you don't want to mess with him or moi. Guns are drawn. Richard, however, again, shows he has brains. Lionel is still drunk. And Richard says he'll talk to Colonel Fraser to come to an understanding. Guns awa. Now, when they talk, we find out that Richard is conveniently anti-regulator. He's got no trouble with the governor. I don't want any trouble with the gov, please. You will never have found people more appropriate to join your cause.
No, but we'll come, but they answer to me.
My Browns answer to me.
Which Jamie rightfully says, cool, as long as you know that you answer to me.
And Mr. Dick will be answering to Jamie.
Dick, what's wrong with you?
Richard, it's a dick.
Oh, so I Richard got it. That was a choice.
Okay.
Though.
Of course, there was a choice. Everything's a choice. Richard is a seeming.
What, you're
gentleman.
Not going to just keep him being Dick the whole time? You started it.
No, it wasn't about starting it. I just did it once. Richard is a seeming gentleman. He's like, please, please stay with us another night.
Back on the ridge?
Stay with us another night. And BT Dubs, hey, lady, why don't you stay inside my house where the respectable people stay? I wouldn't dream of you staying outside with the militia like your husband would have you do.
That happened.
Oh. So showing him up.
It was a pissing contest. It was a straight up pissing contest.
Back on the ridge, Brianna goes to outside to grab some wood. And when she gets back, Jem is gone.
She certainly didn't bring in too much wood.
No, she got like 3 pieces.
Because as someone who's had to replenish wood in the wood pile when you've burned it down to a certain degree, you don't want to do that over and over again. Now, granted, it's not snowing and it's not super cold. They're just trying to keep the room warm. But still, you don't want to do it multiple times. Why would you not bring in more than just enough for right now? It seems wasteful. Wasteful use of energy of a human.
So when she comes back, Jem is gone. And she, understandably, starts to freak out. And he was playing there on a little, like a blank. With Germain.
And I've never noticed how much Germain sounds like Jemmy until they keep saying the names. Jemmy, Jermaine, where's Jemmy? Jermaine, Jemmy, Jermaine, Jemmy. And then she runs outside, Jemmy, Jem. Oh my God, it sounds like the same name.
I think someone has said Germain, but almost everyone says Germain. And Germain is even worse than Germaine because Germaine actually sounds different than Jemmy. But Germain sounds like Jem with something wrong with your mouth. I mean, so Jem was playing with his ball.
Yes, you do. He's a boy. Of course he's playing with a ball.
With an actual ball. And I don't know what Germain was playing, but he was down there on the same blanket with him. She goes out, comes back in. He's gone. And she's like, oh my gosh, where's Jem? And yeah, at first I thought, why are you calling Germain Jem? I was like, what the heck? I was like, okay, she's just maybe not enunciating as well, or it's just so fast. And they do sound similar. Fine.
And poor Germain was telling her where he went.
All I kept saying
was wasn't
ball,
listening.
Ball.
Well, because, but he was pointing too. He was like, ball. And he pointed out the door where Jemmy went. And if she weren't so panicked, she would have been like, oh, you're pointing.
I remember him pointing at first. He only pointed when Marsley got there, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. But he did say, the first time through, I did not catch it. But the second time through, he was saying ball. He was saying ball. So she freaks out, goes outside. Back and forth, da 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 da, comes back, screams, "Ah, where's the baby?" And then Marsley comes in, is like, "What's going on? Where is he? Or what's wrong?" And she's like, "He's gone." And Marsley bends down and asks Germain, or says Germain, and like I legit understood Germain coming from her mouth. So I heard Germain, "Where's Jem?" And he says, "Ball," and he points out this door, and the door is open. So I have a question about the door.
Well, I think that before we talk about your door, we have to understand.
It's not my door.
We have to understand the mindset of a panic and stressed mother. You don't think clearly when shiz goes down.
No one is debating whether her reaction was.
I know, but
worth
here's
it
the
or not.
You're not wrong. Here's the thing: if I just come out that door and I just walk back in that door. That door is not the first one I'd go for to look for the kid who didn't just go through that door. Like, that's the one path you're sure of. Why would you go straight back out the door you just came in?
Yeah, I didn't even catch that. That's true. So it was a different door that he had gone out.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, so...
It's because the house is too big.
Oh, seriously. It's all their fault. So Germain is no help. Well, he actually is. When he is, if people were listening, but she was wanting a little more information. So when Marsley gets information from him and he points and says, ball, she looks up in the direction he's pointing and they see an open door. Now, okay, there's an open door. The only reason the ball was outside is because the door was open. Jim, I don't believe Jim opened a door, right? Jim probably absolutely threw the ball 100%. But, and then he went after it 100%. But I don't believe he opened the door and threw it outside. So my question is, oh, and then as they're, you know, see him, she picks him up. And then as they're closing the door, we get a wide shot from, like, I guess the
like
woods.
Like someone's watching from afar.
Yes. So I'm wondering, number one, because the baby did not open up that ding dong door.
No.
Number two, do you think someone's watching?
Maybe. But I do, but if someone's watching, there's no way they got that far away in the time that she walked outside. So I, and the baby, and he is walking, which means he could have reached the door and opened it himself. Or it could have been a jar. Like, he didn't pick it up and, like, the ball didn't naturally go outside of a closed door. But if it's cold enough to keep the fire lit, why would you not also close the door?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm agreeing with you. It doesn't sound like it, but I am.
So back to Brownsville. All the Browns in the universe line up to give Roger their names for the muster.
And it's all
the
Brown. All they needed was
That's
first
what
name.
I said. All the Browns in the universe. Claire is shown to their room. And Alicia helps out with she. Stays back with the sheet. She's going to help her change the bed, change the sheets. And the woman who is basically in charge says, look, you know, if you want to leave the baby, we'll keep her. Lucinda's baby actually died. It was born too early. So, you know, it's there really is a place for her here.
Early is implied, but they said too small.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So then she leaves. She's like, I'll have to talk to my husband about it, but I'll definitely consider it. And Alicia is giving us the dirt.
Just this couple and this baby. Every time they show them separately and together and the conversation that comes later when they're trying to get them to leave the baby with them. I mean, it's just you just feel so deeply for them because they've just had this amazing, not amazing, but this deep and
a lot,
this deep cutting loss that, you know, there really is no recovering from. And the thing that they did in that time period was just push it aside and say, have another one, have another one. Well, this is an instant salve to what ails them. It's not the same baby, but it allows them to put all that love that they can't give to this baby who's passed. It allows them to have a place for that. And while it's not really a replacement, it is something to occupy them. You know what I mean? And it's a way to not waste her milk that's come in. It's a way to, you know, help a baby and while also helping them with their grieving process. And just, I don't know, just the openness of this time period and these people who are just like, we're not going to hold it against them. We're not going to hold it against them. The sins of its parents, you know, this baby didn't do anything wrong. It was just such a sweet couple.
So Alicia has given them given her some dirt or telling us everything, stuff that we didn't know yet. And Claire has to be the one to tell her that her lover is married.
Brutal. That should have been Isaiah's conversation. That should have been the first conversation.
From day one. Before he undid the insertion. Yes.
Before he undid or ended what?
Did.
Okay.
Alicia says she wishes she were dead. Now, in the books, she did too. And the way that she tried to kill herself in the books was Claire walked in on her in this like top attic room somewhere with it was snowing outside and she had the doors open and she was buck naked on the floor. And Claire's like, what the?
She's like, I'm going to freeze to death because this is the most logical way to die.
Well, it's the only thing she could do that because Claire wouldn't help her like give her a salve. Claire wouldn't give her like a draft or anything.
No, but her need for drama made her overlook the easier way to kill herself with a pistol, which is like to the head or through her mouth. But like trying to aim at your heart.
I mean,
and then it was like drama. It was like, I'm going to shoot my heart because that's what he's damaged in me. I'm heartbroken and that's the way I want to go.
We're not quite there yet.
Fine.
I'm just referring to the part in the book where she tried to kill herself by cold, freezing to death. Back on the ridge, Marcy's all, look.
I love her. I love her so much. I honestly love show Marcy 100% more than I like Book Marsley, and I love Book Marsley.
Bree doesn't say much, and Marsley is trying to convince her that thoughts don't make things happen. Thoughts don't kill people. And Brianna is doing a good job of like expressing her worry, her stuff without basically giving anything away.
Without telling her anything.
Anything. Yeah. And she relays, Marsley relays the story of how she killed her father. But we find out that he actually died in jail. She had wanted him to die and she thought of him dying. And then he died. Brianna's like, you know, you didn't kill him. He died. Da, da, da. And Marsley's like,
Exactly.
Quote, you see, thinking, no matter how hard or long, doesn't make something come true.
Unquote. Unless it does.
It doesn't. So I love, and Summer already kind of said this a little bit, love this scene with Marsley. Honestly, I think this is my favorite scene of the entire episode. I love Lauren Lyle. She is, to me, I think, okay, people are going to not like this, but I think the best actor male we've had on the show has been Tobias Menzies. Of course, he's gone now. The best female, also female, the best actress, female actor we have on the show, because she's still there, I think. I mean, who was that? Laura Donnelly was pretty ding dong good. So I don't know. It's a tie up for me between Laura and Katrina.
But think of how easy it is to play a character who does cool all the time.
Yeah. I think you're right, because Marsley does, for the most part, right? She does everyday stuff, and she makes it interesting. I don't know what it is. I think you're right, though. She's the only, well, we have a lot of Scottish actors now, but one of the only bigger name characters who is a Scottish woman. And it's just, I don't know. I think she brings, as you said, we've talked about, when we chatted with her on the red carpet, it is like, it's her. I mean, that's her.
She's out
that attitude, that like vive, is that right? Vivre, the whatever, joie de vivre, that is her. So it is obviously, Marsley is a fictional character, but Lauren Lyle, outside of the century and obviously the dresses and all of that, that is like her core. She's BA. She is down to frickin' earth. And she's just, she's perfect casting. Perfect casting. That's all I'm going to say. I loved it. What else did you want to say about that scene? That conversation?
That was it.
Back to Brownsville. Keziah isn't well.
This cracked me up. She's like, must you be so much alike with your brother?
Yeah. Like everything, seriously. So she tells him, okay, you guys, like, go pitch your tent at a fair distance. We don't want anyone to get infected by you guys.
Well, not even get infected by them, but they're compromised, which means their immune systems are compromised right now, which means they're susceptible to more stuff, too. So they're like, stay away. The last thing you need is to get sicker than you already are.
Yeah. And so she's like, this can't wait. The twins need to be treated. I can't do it. They both have fevers. I need penicillin. I can't do it here. We have to go back to the Ridge, even though I didn't quite have it yet. I'll have it soon, by gum.
I feel like I was so close. I was so close. It was one bread strain away.
And Jamie's all, okay, go take care of them and then return to me. So I missed that the first time. The first time I thought he's like, okay, go take care of them. I'll see you later, babe. But he's like, no, go take care of them and then return to me. I thought, huh. Okay, so the plan is for her to get back to that. Who knows what will happen, but the plan is for her to go home, take care of the boys, and they stay, and she comes back with Roger. Here, he says, take Roger Mack with you.
I need rather
him to
go.
Rather than saying Roger Mack, and he tells him this later, but he doesn't say it first. Rather than say Roger Mack, my wife needs to go do XYZ to take care of this thing. Would you please? I need you to escort her to keep her safe back to the Ridge to do XYZ. That's not what he says. I mean, maybe he says that. I think he says it to Roger. I don't know if he says this part in front of Roger, but what he says to Claire is, take Roger Mack with you.
get him gone before he creates
it's
more
different
issues.
It's conversations, right? It's to Claire, it's take him with you. He's useless right now. He's useless to me anyway. And then to Roger, he's like, I need you to take my wife and escort her back to keep her safe. And it's like two different things. I get it why he does that, but that's like, it's two different conversations. And Roger, when he hears this, he looks defeated. He's walking back. Jamie is walking back his captain's assignment. He's like, no, he's not taking it away. He's not decommissioning him or, you know, knocking him down a rank. He's just admitting that he failed to fully prepare him for it. He's like, heck, I didn't even tell you what it meant, the word captain. And obviously for him, for her, she knows it's a matter of protection as well. Because, yeah, even if he's not worth shooting much, he at least having a man with you, at least, right, it says something at least visually. So it is a protection, even if he is worth it.
Josiah is a much better shot than anybody. So Josiah will keep them safe.
That's true.
He's sending Roger back as a punishment to Roger and also to show the men that he's displeased and to say that he doesn't approve of what Roger did in his absence and he's fully in charge now. So he's going to go do this menial task of taking his wife home and he'll return back later. So he's...
Roger definitely sees it as menial or lower than what a captain should be doing. But he... Let me go back to something I was saying. So he's like, I didn't even tell you what the word meant. And he had asked him earlier. He had said earlier in the episode. And I'm like, why is he asking him? Like, is this like the etymology like question of the week? What do you know what captain means? Here he says it again. He's like, I didn't even tell you what it meant. So apparently there's a meaning there that we need to like learn about. And he says the plan is for them to come back and join the men after the surgery is done. And as they walk away, Roger shares with Claire that he's worried Jamie doesn't have faith in him. And I totally get it. I don't necessarily disagree with he doesn't have a lot of faith in him right now. I'm not saying that's 100% wrong. But Claire's like, hello, he entrusted me to you, the thing he loves more, person thing he loves more than anything. So he definitely trusts you. But it also could have been a little bit her trying to make him feel better. Because she's probably thinking, oh, gosh, now I got to take care of Roger. That's awful.
Well, we know he's not good. He doesn't have great eyesight.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Back on the ridge, home on the ridge. Brianna collects her drawings of Bonnet and burns them. That's all.
That's physically what she did, but that's it had more meaning than that. She's trying to exorcise the demon and not be so caught up in the what if of the whole thing. Yeah.
Back in Brownsville, another hoedown.
God, was he singing again?
There was definitely music. I don't know if he was singing, but maybe. Lucinda and her husband are chatting up Claire for taking the Bernie. And then the camera goes out to the dancing and you see Fergus is standing there clapping his hands or his hand. And you see he's clapping one wooden hand with his good hand. It's quite entertaining.
How are you going to clap if you only have one hand? What's wrong with you?
Nothing's wrong with me. I'm saying it's kind of entertaining. He's holding him up high so you can't miss his wooden hand. And he's like, here. She says, here, take the baby. I'm going to go dance. And then we get drunk sword dancing versus or followed by Jamie sword dancing. Now, this is different place and time, but also from the book. What did you think about his sword dancing?
I mean, his I'm a little teapot routine.
Sure.
It was effective. I mean, I think it was just as good as Murta's I'm a little teapot routine from season one. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Claire says, I didn't know you could dance like that. I thought, oh, she's turned on.
I mean, she's pretty much primed whenever Jamie looks at her. It doesn't matter what he's just done. So
that is true. As they walk away outside, they have the baby chat. He's all, look, I can give you this one if you want.
I didn't know where this scene was going to go because they're walking drunkenly away from a party. And I was like, are they going to go do it in the woods? What is happening right now? I was like, am I allowed to be watching this? It's about to get like crazy and booby worthy.
While they have the baby chat.
The baby chat?
Chat. Mm. They hear a gunshot and they're like, someone shot. That was a gunshot. Well, yeah. So they run up and they hear like some crying. And
because it's like, how can we make this episode more complicated with 10 minutes left?
So Alicia had tried to shoot herself, but it had misfired or she missed. She's like, no, like you said, I was trying to hit myself in the heart. Mm. Oh, my.
And shot and like barely like grazed her arm.
So they save her. Claire tells her that she's not alone and the baby is worth living for. And later that night, Morton returns and comes to see Alicia. Jamie and Claire help the lovers escape. Now, I know I'm running over a lot of things. When Morton turns up, like with the gun in his hand, he aims it at Jamie. He's like, no, I don't want to hurt you, but I got to see her. Well, okay. Yes, I glossed over that. But at the end, what happens is they go off together. It's cheese, but it's nice. Morton's all, it's all for love. And they're all suckers for love. Yes.
And he's like, if either of you would leave the woman you loved, say it now and I'll leave. Say it now to my face and I'll leave. Uh-huh. Sure, that's exactly what they're going to do.
I take it back. I was a little bit, I spoke a little bit too quickly. They somehow smuggle them in, keep them in for the night. It's the next morning. Early. I'm really surprised they did it in daylight, honestly. But it's the next morning, Jamie and Roger help Alicia and Morton escape together. Jamie even leads the whores.
With like the biggest move ever. Not the whores. The horses.
No.
You said they released the whores?
No, I said nothing like that. I said Jamie even leads the horse they're on.
The horse. I heard out. Leads the whores. And I was like, what?
And then once he leads them out and then they run away or gallop away, he goes and he opens the paddock and lets all the horses escape.
So mean.
And then blames it on poor Billy.
Ugh, and those poor boys that were sent to chase the horses, because that always, oh my God, that always ends well for the humans trying to chase a horse down. I felt so bad for those boys because their faces were like, this sucks. Well, what else are you going to do? You've been told to go run the horses down. You're going to be running and you're never going to catch them. They run way faster than you. And I promise you, running after them scares them, which means they'll keep running.
Oh, fair enough. Well, that was 504.
And that was episode 504, The Company We Keep. Join us next week when we will be discussing episode 505, entitled Perpetual Adoration. And of course, if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, go to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a very special thank you to this episode's co-producer, Tori H. If you are curious just what is this co-producer thing and you want to learn more about Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And don't forget, as I said, there are still a few spots left on our Pod Abroad 2021 tour. You can find everything else, everything out at podabroad.com. And don't ever hesitate to contact us with any questions about the trip, about Patreon, anything. And as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.